Good evening. I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 129 are Kevin Bentley.
Good evening.
Scott Henney.
Hello, everybody.
And Brad Coates.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back, guys.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So tonight on the Diz Dad's podcast, we're going to be talking about winter holiday travel to Walt Disney World. But before we get to that discussion, I want to thank our podcast sponsor, Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. A Fairy Tale Journeys travel agent would be happy to work with you on your next Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, heck, even Disneyland Paris vacation. Check them out at fairytalejourneys.com. All right, guys. So we're talking tonight about traveling to Walt Disney World during those peak travel times, the Thanksgiving holiday, the Christmas holidays, where on the one hand, you've got some of the biggest crowds of the season at Walt Disney World, but then you also have some really unique opportunities that make travel during the holidays compelling despite the crowds in a lot of ways. And I want to start off by talking about some of those special events and special opportunities that are available during the winter holidays. The one that comes to mind immediately and one that probably kicks off first is Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party. So I don't know, how many of you have experienced a Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party?
I have not.
Okay. Well, so Scott and Brad, why don't you start us off and talk a little bit about, you know, what the party is and how that's handled.
Okay. Well, with the special event party, like Mickey's Very Merry Christmas, it's similar to the Halloween party. What they do is they close the park down early, and then it's a private time from 7 p.m. until closing. Where you have to buy a different ticket in order to get in for that event. And as you get into that event, then there's a lot of specialized things that are in there, different shows and different programs. And they give out hot chocolate and cookies. And all of a sudden, it's kind of funny, right around the time that they change the park over and start running everybody out, you'll almost immediately begin to hear the music begin to change in all the parks. And suddenly everything's Christmas. I mean, just literally in the spin of about 15 minutes, you left Disney World and suddenly you're celebrating the holidays.
Yeah, so you know, the parks are already kind of decked out in their holiday decorations, but you know, beginning at 7 o'clock, music changes. They start, you know, passing out the free cookies and hot chocolate. What you get is a smaller park crowd because it's a controlled crowd based on the number of party tickets they sell, and you know, even a sold out party is a lower crowd than you would get during a regular day in the park during a peak travel season. Well, Scott, what were some of your favorite things about the Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party?
You know, like Brad had said, the lower crowds because of the controlled environment. You mentioned that. There's dance parties going on all over the place, different locations in the park. There's dance parties, you know, the castle shows that happen later on in the evening, and the snacks and whatnot, the cookies and hot chocolate and stuff that you can pick up are really good too. The one thing that we really liked is the fact that you can go in, you can get in a little bit earlier than 7. They shut the park down for the party at 7, but you can get there if you don't have a park ticket for that day. They'll let you in at 4, I believe, with your party ticket.
Right, yeah, with your party ticket, they'll admit you at 4, they'll give you your party wristband.
Right. So if I guess what I'm getting at is if you're not spending the day at that park, but you have a party ticket for that night, you can get there a little bit earlier than 7 and get into the park with your party ticket and have, you know, it gives you a couple more hours there.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I mean, we like to joke about it with the Halloween party a lot of times that, you know, it's sort of our poor man's park hopper, because it allows us to go to, you know, one of the other parks for the morning, take a nice long afternoon break, then go back out to the Magic Kingdom at around 4 o'clock, and, you know, the park's open for the party from 4 until midnight, so you get a full 8 hours of park time with a party ticket.
Yeah, and the truth is, with the lines being really considerably shorter, at least when we were there, we weren't there during Christmas week when it really gets crazy, but, I mean, they were walk-ons, and it feels like even a long – it feels like a full day. Those 8 hours, we got in every bit as much as we would have in a full day. The only thing I would recommend is we made the mistake one time of going go ahead and using our ticket in the morning to be the, at Magic Kingdom in the morning and then stayed. I wouldn't do that, because that day, the day of the parties, they just seem to be a lot more congested in the morning. I don't know if people are kind of crowded in because they're getting out or what, but it just seems really packed.
I agree with you, Brad. If and kind of to go along with what Aaron said about the poor man's park hopper, to get the most out of it, that 8 hours is a huge time frame to be able to be at the party. And the crowd levels are less, the lines are less. So why not use that ticket somewhere else if you can?
Right. And we should also mention that, you know, it is a hard ticket event. You are paying separately for it. And so, you know, you really do want to take full advantage of all that the party has to offer, you know, the special parades that run later at night, the special fireworks that run later at night. And so I really recommend to people that if you're going to take full advantage of the party and all the things that are available there, it's worth it to take that break earlier in the day.
Oh, absolutely. And,
especially if you've got younger children, so that they hold up for the party itself. Because, you know, it is an investment. The party tickets have gone up in price, you know, every year. And, you know, it's now, what, north of $60 an adult for those party tickets, I believe.
Yeah. We tend to take that day and not do any other park in the morning. We just take that as a pool day and relax and rest and save the cost of a ticket for that day and just invest it in that ticket, because we get such a lot out of the party. You definitely don't want to be running out of gas when you go to the party, because you're going to be moving. I mean, you're flying all over the park and getting on the right ride, getting out quick, because everything happens real fast. And you go into parties, there are different places. And you mentioned the fireworks. Also, the fireworks show is a holiday themed. It's much better. The castle light show, the laser show is much better. They do a special themed holiday theme. Everything about it is supersized for that party, and it just really makes it a great experience.
And we should also mention that there is no Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party the week of Christmas. Basically, the parks are so crowded at that time of year that what ends up happening is the overall park hours get expanded basically as much as they get expanded any other time of year, and a lot of the things that are special during the party are available in the parks, you know, minus the special fireworks, are available during the park, if for no other reason than they need to be offering some extra things just to occupy people's time, because the crowds are so enormous and the wait times go up so much during the week of Christmas itself. So they can't really afford to shut down Magic Kingdom at 7 o'clock. They
Scott,
need the capacity.
Yeah, Scott, you were the one that actually was there during the Christmas week.
No, we were there Thanksgiving time frame.
Yeah, no, that was Kevin. That was Kevin.
That was Kevin. Yeah, I was there Christmas week.
So,
you're right.
So did they have the dance parties and the front of the castle, you know, dance shows and all of that?
Yeah, they had all of that, but they had a lot of late hours. I remember being there midnight, 1 o'clock, several nights. So without having the Mickey's Christmas party.
Yeah, and so we're going to talk about
and it
that.
It was crowded the whole time.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit more in just a minute. I want to make sure, though, that we cover the rest of the special events and opportunities that are going on during that time, because, you know, the party is kind of a big one that gets a lot of attention because you pay extra for it and all of that. But, you know, even in the Magic Kingdom, for example, you know, the lighting, the evening lights on the castle are completely different for the holidays. And I don't know, Scott, you want to talk a little bit about the special lighting?
Yeah, they tend to, how do I put this, just kind of seasonalize it a little bit better with all the Christmas lights and the way that they glow and stuff. Just makes it a little more Christmassy, even on the nights that are not the Halloween, or I'm sorry, the Christmas party.
Well, they do the you know, each night they do the lighting ceremony for the Castle Dream Lights, which, in addition to the usual sort of, you know, castle changing colors, you get that just amazing effect of, you know, Cinderella's castle appearing to be essentially encased in icicles almost.
Almost
crystal.
Yeah,
almost crystallized.
Cool.
Yeah. And that lighting ceremony is cool because all the lights dim down, all the street lights dim down, everything goes dark. And then there's music and all of a sudden it brings those lights back up. It's really an amazing hair-raising experience.
And so those are the two big things that happen in Magic Kingdom. But we also get special events in all the other parks. I think Epcot in particular gets some really nice holiday, you know, specialties in World Showcase in particular. You've got the Candlelight Processional, which is a major event.
When we did it with the special. You did a dinner. I forget which restaurant we did. I think it was Le Cellier. So then you got a special priority seating area. Otherwise, it's a long wait to get in. So that was very good. But it's phenomenal. It's hard to describe it other than you've got numerous different celebrities who actually do the reading from the Bible, and you have the choir in the background. And it's phenomenal. So they go through the readings and they sing the different carols, and it's a time that is just a place where, you know, I went with my wife and my youngest daughter, and when we left that, it was just like, wow. It's a very unique, very poignant telling of the Christmas story that I've been to numerous churches at Christmas time, but this is one thing that I don't think I can say I've ever seen anyplace else.
Yeah, not to that level. It's off the charts. Yeah. Well, I'm actually a minister, and so for me, when we go, you know, we love that because that's to be able to go to Disney World and actually experience, you know, the story of Christmas was great. But I will mention, you mentioned about priority seating. It may be a little bit different now. We get let in first. All of those that have the tickets from the meal get let in, and then if there's any room left after that, the handful of people that stood in line for an hour might get in. So you really almost, unless you're going on a slow night, you really, I think you really need to think seriously about doing the dining plan so you make sure you get in.
Yeah, and when we say that, there are special dining packages. They call them Candlelight Processional Dining Packages. Almost all of the restaurants in World Showcase offer them. And it's essentially a prefix meal, and then, or in many cases, it's a prefix meal and priority seating. Sometimes it's just an ordering off the regular menu, and then the priority seating. But in both cases, the real key here is that you're saving yourself, number one, the standing in line piece, and number two, you're ensuring a seat.
There's very
limited seating, and it's not so much that you can't experience it standing, but it's much more relaxing to experience it seated.
And the meal is more expensive. I mean, you will pay more for the meal than you would if you just wouldn't have that meal in that restaurant. You're basically paying for that priority seating, but it's worth it.
It is definitely worth it.
Yeah. We didn't mention it, but does anybody know how many – we should give a sense of this for people. I mean, this is massive. It's a full orchestra. It's got – does anybody know? It's like about a 200-voice choir or so.
Yes,
like
it is.
It's a huge choir. There's a cast component, and then they also have
Local schools and high schools and,
well,
yes.
And I
choirs.
Have, I mean, they travel. I know I've got a friend who's a choir director for a school in New Orleans, and they're going back, I think, for the second or third time.
Wow.
To sing at Candlelight Processional all the way from New Orleans.
Yeah, it's an impressive experience.
Yes, it is.
And so in addition to Candlelight Processional and World Showcase, sort of during the day, you can bounce around from country to country and experience what they call holidays around the world. Brad, why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Well, you know, in World Showcase, you have multiple nations and countries represented. And basically what they do is they tried in each of the countries to represent what the holidays are like in their country. So the traditions, they may not have a Santa Claus, but they'll have something similar to that. What's the one country that has the witches or some the witch that they – I forget. But anyway – I don't want that to sound bad. It's just that they have different ways that they celebrate during that time. And so when you go into those countries, you'll have a different version of Santa Claus. You'll have the different traditions. You'll have the different – and there's stories and things that are being told by – in each of those countries by that individual that will be representing their holiday figure, whether it's Santa Claus or somebody else. And then they'll be telling you stories and everything. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, and you know, look, this is Disney. Storytelling is what they do. So these are our veteran World Showcase cast members who tell a great story.
Right. And then they come out dressed as Father Christmas or Santa Claus or Joel Noel, depending on who on which country you're at. And I mean,
right.
it's a great experience. It's also great education. To learn each country's little, their traditions and stories of Christmas, how they're
yeah,
similar yet different.
I was going to say, but anybody out there that got nervous when he said educational, it is, but don't let that scare
yeah,
you. It's good educational. It's a lot of fun, you know. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's funny to go into Canada and see the guy come out, you know, looking like he's, you know, from Alaska or something. He's got his plaids on and his...
Okay, so that kind of is the core of Epcot celebration. Hollywood Studios has a significant component as well. And over in the Streets of America area, you have what is, to me, quite possibly the most impressive holiday light display you will ever see anywhere, period. The Osborne Family Lights. They're just stunningly gorgeous.
I'd have to agree with you on that one, Aaron.
There's no way for us to give words to describe it.
They're phenomenal.
I've had the opportunity to see them a couple of times, and I remember the first time we just kind of stumbled upon it. I've been to Disney World a couple of times around Christmas time. And it was one of those very cold. It had gotten, you know, down in the 40s, upper 30s. So, you know, everybody's freezing and you're walking across the lights and then the Disney magic happens. You got the snow falling and it was the right temperature and it just sucks you right on in.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've taken some pictures and posted them in the past and I think the pictures are decent pictures. I don't think I'm a great photographer, but I got some decent pictures. But photographs don't convey the kinetic energy of the dancing lights, which they are.
And even the video doesn't. I've done video with it, and I try to show it to people. Well, that's nice. I'm thinking, oh, it just doesn't capture it. You just got to see this.
Yeah, you've got to experience it.
Every building, every street comes alive. Everything dances to the sounds of the music. Everything's synchronized. And I don't know about you guys. I know the first time I went, you know, being the commando type guy I am, you know, we have 13 minutes we're spending in the lights. And we got in there and we had to stay for two or three renditions of it because it runs for a while and then it stops and it goes kind of dormant for a while and the lights are just pretty and then all of a sudden it takes off again. But it was so incredible. You just can't get it all in one sitting. And so we sat there for like two or three of them. I think we were in there for like an hour, 15 minutes.
And by the way, over the last year or so, one of the things that Disney has done is they've made it easier and sort of encouraged people to linger a little longer. They've taken to setting up a mobile, you know, one of the carts selling adult beverages at the end of Streets of America to encourage people to linger a little longer.
I really wish I would have known that was there last year when I was down in Osborne Lights.
They also had a mobile food court down there last year, Christmas time, too.
Huh? Yep.
A food truck.
Yeah, as it gets closer to Christmas and the holidays get busier and the parks get busier, they do more and more to help kind of serve that big crowd. And that is an issue with the Osborne Family Lights. If you want to see the lights, crowd tends to be really big right as the lights are turned on. And then again, sort of at the end of the night. So sometimes it's best to try and carve out some time sort of between when the lights first turn on and, you know, that last hour of park opening or so to go over and enjoy the lights, and you can avoid some of the crush.
Yeah. One thing that we learned on that, Aaron, the mistake that we made the night that we went to Osborne Lights, we also were planning on going to Fantasmic. And we got shuffled through Osborne Lights really quickly to be able to make it over to Fantasmic. Yep. And I would strongly suggest to anybody that's going to see either one, make them on two separate nights, because it's going to be a really busy night. And if you got a big group, like we had a crowd of almost 25 that we're trying to keep track of to get through Osborne Lights and over to Fantasmic.
That's a good point.
It's a really big crowd, and it takes a little bit to get sifted through it and to be able to get on if you got other plans for the night. So,
yeah, and actually, you know, all of these evening holiday events is one of the really good arguments for park hoppers especially during holiday travel, because a lot of these things, you know, you want to see Osborne Lights. You need to set aside specific time to do that. And even if you're not going to spend the rest of that day at Hollywood Studios, this is one of those things where you'd use the park hopper so that you can do something else during the day, bounce over in the evening, and, you know, just go for the lights. Or, you know, go somewhere else and come back just for Fantasmic, so that you don't have to try and cram everything into one day.
Well, I know one thing we did was we had gone in September last year, then went back in December, and we're going enough days that we went and got the annual passes,
right,
which made it huge differences. We could come and go to any of the parks as we wanted to and not worry about, well, we're going to go this day or not. So, I mean, if you're going to be there for 10 days, I highly recommend doing the annual passes.
Good point. All right, so.
One quick thing before jump off Osborne Lights. You had mentioned the adult beverage cart at the end of Osborne Lights. There's also some stuff at the beginning of the Streets of America for the kids. There's I know for a fact, the Goofy that dresses up as Santa, and I think there's a couple other characters that dress up for the holidays down there closer to the beginning of the Streets of America back by where Lights Motors Action is, too. So
Right. Yeah, so those are some nice opportunities.
That was something we hadn't talked about before, but it's something for everybody. Even if you've done your photo albums with the kids and you're thinking, well, this time we're going to skip all the characters and everything, it's a whole different set there. Whatever park you're in, they're all they've got their holiday outfits on, and so if there's a way to fit the time in to do photos, it's a good time to add that also. Because
absolutely,
you're going to get a lot of characters in outfits you'll never see them that way again.
Yeah, that's a good point. And actually, to that point, even Animal Kingdom isn't completely left out of, you know, holiday special decor and theming. It's less maybe obvious and prevalent, but they do change up the afternoon parade there at Disney's Animal Kingdom, and you get the what do they call it? The Jingle Jam?
Jingle. Yeah,
Jingle Jangle.
Parade.
Instead of Jungle Jam, and it's Jingle Jangle Parade.
And I'll tell you what, I love it. I think it's an awesome parade.
Yeah, I mean, I hear a lot of good things about it. Talk a little bit about the parade, Brad. What makes it stand out for you?
You know, I guess it's just the quirkiness of it, because it's, you're right. When you go to Animal Kingdom, it's you're visiting Africa, so you're or India, and it's, so it's just more subtle with the decorations in a lot of ways. And so the parade is a lot like the other parade, where there's a lot of characters, a lot of bright colors, a lot of those things. But now they give it that this holiday twist. I don't know how else to explain it other than that. It's the holidays, but it's the holidays from, you definitely feel like it's not the American holidays, if that makes sense. It's sure. I don't see this. You don't see it the way that we would see it. And so I just love it. The characters, the animals, and the way that they'll tie the animals in with the holiday decoration, the theming, and then also the characters and their outfits. And for me, I think I may like the characters at Animal Kingdom in their Christmas costumes better than any park. They do some really clever stuff there with their keeping it African themed and and holiday at the same time.
All right. Yeah. Now, a couple other things that are kind of special opportunities maybe during the holidays that aren't tied to a particular park. One is that there are some special tours that run only during the holidays. I know, Brad, you've looked into these quite a bit, done some research on them. Do you want to just kind of mention a couple of these tours?
Well, the one I'll mention, the main one, is the D-Lights tour. And that one, we're in a minute, we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, what do you do to help plan to do these things. The one thing about the D-Lights tour that makes it interesting, it makes a trip into all three of the more holiday-driven parks, Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Hollywood Studios. And what you do is, in each one of those parks, you're going to experience that key thing. So you're going to see the castle lighting. You're going to see Osborne Lights. You're going to experience the candlelight processional. And each one of those parks. Now, the one thing I have heard about this is it's very fast-paced and fast-moving, but you will get a chance to experience all of those key things, plus have a buffet built into it towards the end of it, so that you have a light meal to go with it. And so it's not cheap. It's about $200, but, you know, typical tour. But when you consider how much you get out of that, three parks experiences and all of the key components, to me, for a person that may be coming for one time or the only time to the parks and they're worried about whether they're going to be able to catch all of the items, I think it's a great way to do it and make sure you hit all those key components.
Yeah, that is a nice, you know, kind of comprehensive way to cover everything quickly. And make sure that you don't miss any of those key elements. And so if you've got a shorter trip, or, you know, you're concerned about being able to fit in everything, it might be a good way to do that.
Right.
I think if you've got the time, if it's me and I have the time to do it, I'd rather take my time and
absolutely
do them one at a time. But
yeah. If you talked to anybody about them that's taken them, if you hear the one complaint I always hear is it's rushed.
Yeah. And it's so, just by definition, yeah. Because there are certain things that they have to get from place A to place B, because the thing at place B is going to happen, and so they got to get there in time for it.
Yeah, because it's only like a 4 to 5 hour tour, so yeah. You're going to a lot of locations. You got to get in and out of the parks. You got to get to those things in that amount of time. You're not there very long.
All right. Well, that kind of takes us to the last thing I want to mention, which is, you know, in the special events or special opportunities areas. And that's sort of, I guess, almost a self-guided tour that's available when you're at Walt Disney World during holiday time. And that is that all of the resorts at Walt Disney World feature, you know, unique decor, special decorations, music, and, you know, all of these things that are unique to the resort and are special for the holidays. Kevin, I don't know, you want to speak a little bit to the holiday decor of the Walt Disney World resorts?
Sure. I know when we went this last Christmas, one of the things we did was we took a little bit of time to just kind of hit the different resorts because each one has a unique theme, a unique Christmas tree. I know I spent time taking pictures of all the different Christmas trees. We stayed at a couple of different resorts and did some resort hopping, so it was really interesting to see how Jambo and Kidani had decorated and their Christmas tree, and then Wilderness Lodge always has a fabulous one. And then we got over to Beach Club Villas and Yacht Club to see theirs. We went over to the Grand Floridian for tea and had an opportunity to see theirs. And it's not only the Christmas trees. Each one had a unique style and a unique, huge gingerbread house.
Right,
which is really cool to see.
Yeah, you've got a gingerbread house in the Grand Floridian that, you know, has a working chimney.
Yeah. Well, and actually it's big enough they sell stuff out of it. They go inside it.
Yeah.
It's
yes,
a house.
They do.
Yep.
And if I could throw a little plug in real quick, if you get the opportunity, take a cruise at Christmas time too, because it's the same thing. They've got beautiful tree up in the atrium and a huge gingerbread house and all kinds of activities there too.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, they really do carry that through at least all the deluxe resorts. And there is special decor at the other resorts as well. But, you know, I'll be honest. I mean, they really pull out all the stops in the deluxe resorts. You know, there's a gingerbread carousel at Beach Club.
Chocolate. Isn't it a chocolate one at Yacht?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
A lot of chocolate at the Yacht Club. And it's a big carousel. It's not some little.
Yeah,
it's a full-size carousel.
Right. Yeah, when I say gingerbread carousel, you know, if it wasn't made out of gingerbread, my five-year-old could ride the horse.
Yeah, it's only about 8 feet around, but the horses are full-size.
Just about.
Yes.
Yep, pretty much.
Yep.
And then the trees at Animal Kingdom and at Wilderness Lodge are both very much themed, and it just massive. These trees are just
huge.
Yeah, and you know, the nice thing about it is that you can see it all for free. You can use, you know, touring around and checking those decorations out as a way to kind of get out of the crush of the crowd in, you know, when the height of the day in the parks. It's kind of a way to have a little bit more relaxing day. You can kind of maybe take a break from the parks for a day and just, you know, bounce from resort to resort. You can make use of the monorail and do a circuit of the monorail resorts, hop change monorails at the TTC, and then take a boat on around to the Epcot area resorts, and really take kind of a leisurely day to explore the decor of all these different resorts and just really kind of absorb the unique atmosphere of each of them.
It's funny you mentioned it that way. We actually used that specifically, put it in the middle of our trip, took that one day and did no parks. We just toured. That's what we did. And so we planned our lunch in one resort and planned dinner later. And we literally ended up at Wilderness Lodge and got to watch the water pageant. And so you can have a very relaxing day and hit them all. And there's something to be had by every resort.
Well, sure. And, you know, you plan that out. You wrap yourself up at Wilderness Lodge or the Polynesian or the Grand Floridian. And if you choose the right day, you know, you can watch the electric water pageant and then
the fireworks.
Exactly. And the fireworks. And if you pick the right day, you can see the holiday party fireworks from the beach.
Right. Yep.
The beach or the top of the world. If I recommend that spot.
Phenomenal.
If you haven't done that.
Yeah, that takes a DVC member to help you get up there. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
I'm so glad I am one.
Me too.
but if you either are a DVC member or have a friend who is one who will escort you.
We'll take you with us next time, Aaron.
There you go.
There we go.
The Top of the World Lounge at Bay Lake Tower does offer a pretty remarkable view.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, we've talked about all of the things that might make a trip over the holidays compelling. You know, I mean, in addition to the kids being out of school, there are all of these sort of extra experiences. But there are some challenges to traveling out to Walt Disney World during the holidays. because it is the holiday travel season. And maybe the first thing to talk a little bit about is, you know, dealing with the challenges just of the travel itself and, you know, the additional airport traffic during the holidays. So, you know, Kevin, I think you and Brad both have, you know, fairly long trips. Brad, you probably have the longest travel to Walt Disney World, coming all the way from the Mountain Time Zone. You know, what do you do to kind of manage the challenge of you know, airport travel and during the holidays to Walt Disney World?
Yeah, sure. And also for us, I live in a very small community, so I have a 2-hour minimum drive before I get to the airport. So, but the bottom line is, I think two things. Number one, and it all kind of ties together, it's the same way when you're in the parks. When you're there, you have to manage your expectations. You may not get to do it all because it's busy. When you travel, it's the same way. Manage your expectations. It is going to be crowded. Every other time of the year when they say be there, you know, 3 hours early, and you get there and you're through it in 30 minutes and you say, I'll never waste that time ever again. You need to rethink that, because in the holidays, if you happen to hit, especially in the weekends, I think it was the worst days were Fridays and Mondays from my airports, or Fridays and Sundays. You get stacked up. It's a lot. And then the second thing is, when I say manage your expectations, you know what? If you're going to take a trip to Walt Disney World during the holidays, you might as well get over the fact that it's going to be ridiculously expensive. It's airfare is going to be a lot more. Dining, they're going to charge you more because it's that they charge a premium on certain times of the year. You know, you're going to want to do tours and things to minimize the frustration levels. So you know what? Just don't worry about it. Book the airfare. Don't sit there and sweat the fact that it's probably 50 to 60% higher or more than what you're used to paying.
Well, and
for me, that's our biggest thing.
Yeah, and Scott, you know, you're coming from Iowa. You know, there are some unique issues of traveling to Walt Disney World in, you know, November, December from a snowbelt state.
Yeah, I will never forget last November when we came home. We landed in Cedar Rapids, and there was 1 to 2 inches of snow. They cleared the runway, but as soon as we turned, got slowed down and turned off the runway, there was no asphalt. It was all snow. Weather is a huge factor for anybody that can get snow during the winter. And, you know, it's going to slow down your flights. If you're driving, expect the extra time. You know, you're going to be slowed down with snow and ice and traffic and everything else. So that's another huge factor, too.
Yeah, and one thing to realize is that even if you're not in a place that has major, you know, winter weather issues anymore, you know, these flights connect through other cities, and more and more we're seeing travel delays because, you know, a plane has to come through Detroit, Minneapolis, Chicago, New York, and any of those major cities have potential winter weather issues that can cause flight delays. So, you know, I guess the one thing I would say is that when you're traveling during the holidays, I always think, you know, I'm normally one who says maybe travel insurance in particular circumstances, maybe not every time. I think that when you're traveling during the holidays and there are potential weather issues, there are potential delays that have nothing to do with your home airport, but, you know, have to do with equipment being able to get there on time. I think it's well worth the expense.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, and one of my tips is, you know, if you can, being from the Pacific Northwest here, we're fortunate that we can get direct flight from Seattle to Orlando. So I figure if I can get off the ground here, I know I can land there. Most times, anyway.
but what you were talking about, Aaron, that's one thing I really can relate, because I'm in the high desert. I mean, we were like 95 degrees today, you know, so it's we don't worry about snow, and I don't worry about snow there, but we don't have any direct flights. They're very rare. So the times we've ever had issues, exactly what you're describing, and it happens year in and year out when we travel in the weather season. You get stuck or you get rerouted to a different city instead of landing in the place where you were going to change planes or the plane you were going to change onto never showed up. And so it's a good point because it definitely affects you.
You know, oh, go Aaron, ahead. Aaron, along those lines of the trip insurance, I've never had to actually use it. I've had it before, but I've never used it. So I don't know how exactly this comes into play. But if, say, you were to get stuck in Chicago because of bad weather, and you had a 9 a.m. flight out of home, wherever that might be, and you were leaving Chicago and got delayed, and you had park tickets for that day, are you going to be able to get the insurance to pay for the park tickets that day if you show up at 10 o'clock at night in Orlando?
I don't know about that particular circumstance. I do know of people who have used their travel insurance to do things like, get an extra night in a hotel covered because their flight home got canceled. And so the travel insurance covered the extra night in the hotel. People who, they made it, but their luggage didn't because the weather at the airport where they were making the change, they couldn't get the luggage transferred fast enough. You'd be surprised how often that happens. But, when a plane lands and they've got to move the luggage from one plane to another and it's snowing outside, that process gets delayed. And so, I know people whose travel insurance has paid to purchase them a couple of days of clothes that they needed until their bags caught up with them. Situations where, obviously the travel insurance covers, a meal along the way or meals, when you arrive and are, off schedule. All of those things are ways that travel insurance will help. And it'll certainly help. I mean, when you're given the option by the airline, and I've seen this happen, well, it wasn't our fault. We didn't cause the problem. It's a weather issue. When that happens, they're not obligated to put you up in a hotel. And so I know that my mother, who was traveling, got caught in Atlanta, and her flight, the equipment couldn't get to Atlanta. So they were there overnight because it was a weather issue. The airline wasn't required to provide any compensation. So if she wanted to do anything other than, sleep at the airport, it was going to be on her own dime. And that's the kind of thing that travel insurance will cover.
Well, and that's kind of what I was thinking too, is we tend to travel. We love the fall and getting into wintertime for going to Walt Disney World. So when we travel, we tend to not pick a park day for our travel day, especially if we have a mid-morning flight. If it's going to be possible inclement weather, either take an earlier flight so you got the time, or don't get a park day for a midday flight on your arrival day, because there's a possibility for a delay there.
Yeah, Kevin, you had some good tips for people who are traveling during those, time periods where weather might be an issue as well.
Yeah, we did Magical Express from the airport to the resort. And I tell you what, it was great because we also started out by using a shuttle service to SeaTac Airport from where I live. So we handed them the bag. So then we picked them up outside the bus, took them right in and had them loaded onto the plane. And then we never saw them again till we got to the room at Disney. That was a nice part. We didn't have to fight the crowds at the carousels and all of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's one of those areas where Magical Express can be really helpful. And you had mentioned something about, packing in ways that kind of make it a little easier to deal with a situation where, one bag doesn't make it out of your luggage.
We always pack at least 1 to 1.5 days of clothes in our carry-on,
right,
just to make sure it gets there with us. Regardless, you know, we've taken Magical Express two or three times, and it's always came through for us. We've never had an issue with flights or Magical Express or anything, but just to make sure that we have clothes with us.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does make it easier.
And one of the things we do, too, is instead of packing each person's clothes in a separate bag, is we spread them around so that everybody has some clothes in each bag. So that way, if, say, we do lose one bag or two bags, we also still have some clothes to at least start the vacation with.
Right, yeah. So nobody's stuck having to, you know, run to the resort store. And the thing that I learned is that finding shirts and even jackets is fairly easy. Finding pants is hard.
Well, if you go over to the gift shop over at the Yacht Club, they have some nice pants there.
Oh, okay. Well, good to know.
The only thing I was going to say, though, Kevin, make sure that when you do that, if you only have the one bag, that you don't dress in the dark and end up in your wife's dress. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Good point.
And we also did want to talk about the fact that when you're traveling during these times, as we've said a couple of times already, you know, the parks are more crowded, the resorts are more crowded, and the restaurants are more crowded. So how do you deal? What are some things that you can do to help make managing these in-park crowds and the dining situation a little bit easier for yourself and your family?
Well, I would say one thing is take advantage of some ADRs.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And take advantage. You may be the type that never is worried about booking way in advance. They let you book 180 days out. I know it's silly to think that 6 months before you get there, you've got to decide where you're going to eat. But if you're going to eat anything besides quick service, book 180 days out.
Yeah. The other thing we do sometimes is, you know, because we've seen a lot of the parades and such, is we may hit a quick service during the parades, you know, and since we're about 3 hours off from you guys, our stomachs are usually off that much. So that's another way to eat off of, you know, so we delay when we eat because, you know, it might be 9 o'clock for you, but it's only 6 for us.
Good point.
You know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, eating at off times can help. Definitely make those ADRs in advance. One thing to remember is that when there are that many more people, it's that much more important to check in early for your ADRs. You know, if you've got a 7 p.m. dining reservation, you really want to check in at 6:45.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Because, you know, you have to remind yourself, an ADR is not the same as a reservation in a restaurant at home. That's
right.
Not the time you should expect to sit down. All right? That's when the restaurant puts you in line for the next table.
Exactly.
And so, you know, and they're going to start running that clock. They're going to insert you into that line for the next table when you check in for your ADR. So if you don't check in for an 8 o'clock ADR until 8 o'clock, you may not be eating until 9 o'clock. Because by later in the evening and they're running a little behind, you know, you're gonna wait.
Yep. Yeah, if you're going to do dining during the holidays and you want to make it part of your experience and you're going to do these, you really do have to think in terms of no matter – and even if you check in 15 minutes early, understand you are most likely going to wait at least 30 minutes and maybe longer before you get in. It just – it everything runs slower because there's a lot of people there. Quick service, you get in and out real quick. But if you're going to do the dining experience, you need to plan that extra time into your touring plan.
Great points about the dining stuff, but also on the crowd level stuff, because they're so much higher, make sure you do your extra planning and use the travel advisor. Touring Plans website, and get that extra stuff out of the way. And then with the way that Disney's moving forward with the My Disney Experience stuff and the Magic Bands, which is a whole nother podcast in itself, you know, take advantage of those opportunities to put yourself where you want to be when you want to be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, those are really important because it's easy to think that, you know, we're going for the holidays. It's a holiday. We want to be laid back. We want to just kind of enjoy the experience. The thing is that if you don't do the advanced planning, you're going to end up spending your time stuck in lines or waiting for experiences instead of enjoying experiences.
Yeah. And then the other thing. One other thing here, too, is that, I mean, if you are staying on property, take advantage of the extended magic hours. You know, go in early or stay late if you can. Take some time off in the middle of the day to go back to your room, recharge, go swimming, take a nap.
Yeah, and those late extra magic hours, if you're, you know, if you can get your kids, if you've got younger kids and you can get them adjusted to the late hours, or if you've got older kids who are ready to handle it, those are really great times to be in the park because the crowd levels really do drop back, you know, after 10 o'clock or so.
And keep in mind now in the holidays that the late extra magic hours are going to be very late. But,
yeah.
You know, a lot of the train plans and others, they tell you, you know, avoid the parks for extra magic hour days. And I tend to agree with that on normal times, but on the holidays, I think you hit the nail on the head. You want to be there as early as you can get there, and you want to stay as late as you can. Take the big giant break in the middle, but be there early because it'll be light crowds. Be there late because it'll be light crowds, and then take your relaxation in the middle, and you'll get a lot more done and feel a whole lot less stress, no matter what week you're there.
Yeah, and you know, I think that some of that same advice is relevant even for, you know, counter service dining, because I know that when I walk into, like Pecos Bill is a great example, right? It's a huge quick service restaurant, and it's really just about the only quick service restaurant on that side of the park. You know, you get a couple of things that are open seasonally, so they'll be open.
Yeah,
but along Frontierland there, it's the only thing that's open. It gets really crowded in there. The best thing I can say is, you know, have a Disney dining app on your phone. I highly recommend it. You know, it's built into Touring Plans app. There are a couple other Disney dining apps. I don't care which one you use. But have one that has current menus so that on your way into the restaurant, you and your family can already be looking at the menu and making decisions about what you want to order. Because the last thing you want to do in a really crowded counter service restaurant like that is have, you know, your entire family of, you know, 4, 5, 6, however many people, you know, crammed into that line trying to read a menu above the, you know, above the queue, trying to decide what you want to eat. It's so much easier to simply, you know, have everybody figure out what they want as you're getting into that line. Have one person wait in the line. Everybody else can, you know, wait in the back and be ready to help you carry stuff when the food comes up. But the crush of people in those counter service restaurants during prime times, you know, it's just crazy. And 3/4 of the people in those lines don't need to be there.
Yeah, one other thing to keep in mind, too, that they've just changed here starting in October is that all the restaurants now are requiring a credit card when you make your advance reservations. So it's really important if you don't make it to cancel 24 hours ahead.
Yes.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That policy is coming this next, you know, will be taking effect this month, and they're going to be requiring those credit card guarantees on all counter or all table service dining locations. Yeah. So,
but I think you mentioned this earlier, Aaron, and it ties into what you were just saying there, and that's the key all with the dining. Get your family acclimated to the understanding we will not be having lunch from noon to one. We will not, you know, do two or whatever. We will not be stopping for dinner from 5 to 7. It's not worth it. What we did was, and I'll be honest with you, it's not even worth it to go to a snack cart at noon. There's, I mean, everything's stacked up. So, I mean, it's crazy, right?
Really, so
we would just carry snacks in our backpack because we knew we'd get hungry around those times. And I would just tell them, listen, we're going to either eat earlier than that or we're going to eat later than that. And here's a snack to tide you over. And it's in the backpack. And here you go. Because you will burn up so much time. Like, and I, boy, you really brought back bad memories with Aaron standing there with a family of 10 people. And they're all, well, I don't like that. And I want, then you're just like, oh my gosh, here, borrow my app. Make up your mind. But, you know, you'll save yourself a lot of headache and frustration if you really make sure you avoid those critical premium times to dine. Snack during those times if you have to, but dine at the off times, and you'll save yourself a ton of time.
Yeah, one thing we try to do, too, is we'll have our main meal, maybe our sit-down meal, in the early afternoon, and then later on in the evening we'll just do a quick service.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's got the double benefit of, you know, if you're not on a dining plan especially, the lunch meal is often the cheap. Identical menu as the dinner meal, but it's, you know, $12 to $15 cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good thinking.
All right, so the last thing, and I do want people to understand, we're not telling you don't go during the holidays, it's too crowded. What we're saying is, it's crowded, but it's manageable if you plan and think ahead.
That's right.
Definitely. And you know what? It is worth it to throw it at least once.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not only experience. Are we telling you not to, in my opinion, everybody needs to do it at least once.
Yes, I mean, we've done it. Okay, I was going to say, we've done it, I think, 3 times now.
And as far as I'm concerned, if that's all we do from now on, I'd be happy. The holidays are just, they're just a blast.
They
are. There's ways to do it and not have to have it ridiculously crowded, you know. But, yeah, it's just a whole different experience for Disney World.
All right, so let's talk about the last kind of big issue that's hanging out there. And this is one that part of the family discussion of making a decision to take this kind of trip, and that is, how do you do your family holiday celebration when you're not home, when you're at Walt Disney World instead? And, you know, what special things do you need to bring with you in order to facilitate those celebrations? And you know, how do you bring a piece of home that allows you to have a holiday celebration that's still a family holiday celebration, even when you're on vacation? I know, why don't we start with Brad? Because I know that you've done this for Thanksgiving a couple of times. So how do you celebrate Thanksgiving in a theme park?
Well, for us, let me think about it here for a second. The when we did Disneyland, that's a different thing. Disney World, there's plenty of restaurants throughout Disney World that have special menus for the holidays. And this is one of those things where we always made sure 180 days out, we figured out which restaurant we really wanted to have that special kind of a Thanksgiving dining experience. And then we've got that booked. But many of them have special menus. And so it's real easy to find a place to go. If you're not sure, for somebody going for the first time, go to Liberty Tree Tavern. I mean, it's Thanksgiving food all the time, right? Or no, is that
no, that is. That's the one.
Yeah, Liberty Tree Tavern. Yeah. So, I mean, they don't even have to redo it. It already is. So for Thanksgiving, it's a little bit different than the Christmas side of it. We mainly made it that day to make sure that somewhere we were going to take some time to set apart for the meal together, and then just have some relaxing time together. That's all we really did. So, as far as for Thanksgiving, because it's different than Christmas. We didn't bring decorations or anything. At Christmas, we brought decorations. We had a suitcase that had, you know, lights, and we strung them on our balcony. And we were actually staying at a DVC at that time, so we strung them on our balcony, and we had a little tree that we put up, and we brought some smaller gifts and things that we could put around it and have something to open.
Okay. And Kevin, what about you? You've done the Christmas thing a few times, so, you know, how do you bring the family Christmas celebration with you to Disney World?
Well, a lot of what Brad was saying at Christmas time, this last year, when Target put all their Christmas stuff out, they had a little about a 3 foot tall, 2.5 foot tall, fully decorated lighted Christmas tree that was in a small box. Well, that went into our luggage, and then we packed some of the small presents with us, but we said, you know, Santa will leave the larger presents at home, and we'll open them when we get back home. So that worked really well, and as far as Christmas dinner, that was Liberty Tree Tavern. Where else would you go for Christmas dinner?
It's funny. The other ones put in special menus, but it's like, well, I know where to go to have really good holiday meals.
There we go.
And, you know, Scott, you did a bit of your Christmas celebration on your trip last year.
Yeah, our trip was the week before Thanksgiving, so it was a little pre-Christmas, but that was the kids' Christmas gift, was the trip. And we did the same thing that Brad had talked about. We packed basically almost a suitcase in itself with all the decorations. You know, the room got decorated a little bit. We were staying at Boardwalk, and we had a balcony view. So we decorated our balcony with some Christmas lights. And our kids were actually small enough to have a stroller. So everywhere that we went, we had battery-operated Mickey head red and green Christmas lights on the stroller.
I love those. Yeah, there you go.
I tell you what.
Mickey ears, Santa hats. Yeah.
Well, of course.
It was awesome. And that was our Christmas trip, was a week before Thanksgiving. So.
Hey, I wear the Mickey ear Santa hats every year, whether I go or not.
Whether it's Christmas or not.
I wear it today. I don't care when I wear it. I love it.
You know, Aaron, you mentioned our trip that we took, and we won't get into the whole thing because we did that podcast on that. But the one thing about it, too, if your kids are older, my kids are older. My youngest is 14 now. My oldest is 19. So I don't have to worry about explaining to them how the reindeer are going to land at Boardwalk, you know. I don't have to go through any of that. So what we did was we took our Thanksgiving trip and we made it Christmas. And I had Christmas gifts every day, something special. They opened every day. And it was something we'd never done before at Disney. We did all kinds of creative new things. And we literally said, guys, you're having Christmas. We're broke. We're done. This is it. So put on your Santa hat and dream that it's December. But you can actually kind of, and the cool part of it is in the parks, when you're there during Thanksgiving week, everything's done. Everything that's going to be set up for Christmas is already set up once they hit that week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And so you literally get all of the, in fact, the end of the Thanksgiving week, I think, is the first Christmas party. So you literally can experience all of it during that week. And
actually,
so,
the Christmas parties start remarkably early. There's a sort of a changeover date. The last Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween party this year is, I believe, November 1st. And the first Mickey's Very Merry Christmas party is November 8th.
Oh, wow, yeah. One of these days, that's the trip I want to do. One of those ones they've talked about where you can spread it out and you can experience the Halloween party at the beginning and then do Christmas at the end of your trip. I want to do one of those. That would be a lot of fun.
There you go.
Since you brought it up, Aaron, there's some really cool time-lapse videos, if you look around on YouTube, of that transition that they do from the Halloween decorations to the Christmas decorations. It's a cool video to watch.
Very cool.
From what I understand, a lot of it happens just overnight, does it not?
That's the way the video makes it seem, and that's the way I understand it, is all that decoration changes pretty much overnight, yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, you know, you've heard from us about what we think about holiday travel to Walt Disney World. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Brad Coates.
Hey, everybody.
Also with us tonight was Scott Henney.
Good night, guys.
And Kevin Bentley.
Good night, everyone.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.